the association with disparities in the receipt of needed dental care, findings from the Survey of the Health of Wisconsin.
Thank you, Dr. Malagan.
Thank you. Well, thank you for this opportunity to be here and for sticking with us on the last day of the conference at 8:30 in the morning. I want to just thank you for the introduction as well. So I am currently the co-director of what's called the Survey of the Health of Wisconsin Project, which is out of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And I'll explain what that program is as we go along. I also want to recognize and thank my co-authors on this paper, Dr. Lauren Wisk, who's currently a postdoc at Harvard University, and Dr. Javier Nieto, who is the founding director of the SHOW program. So she indicated in my bio, I am an environmental epidemiologist by training, but I've become somewhat of a generalist epidemiologist, particularly around understanding health disparities at a population level, and which brings us to why I would even get involved with issues related to oral health disparities. I do a lot of community-based participatory research in the Wisconsin area, and oral health continually rises to the top. I'm sure there are many of you here who've been in the oral health sessions who don't need me to repeat this information because it's pretty background, but I want to just make sure we are somewhat all on the same page. So the U.S. Surgeon General in 2000 indicated disparities in oral health as a silent epidemic. Oral health, as we all know, is an essential and integral component of overall health, and the lack of access to oral health care contributes to profound and enduring oral health disparities in the United States. And being from Wisconsin, that we see this burden being a particularly big one, where approximately 40% of adults in Wisconsin have lost a tooth to decay or gum disease. And in 2010, this also really impacts our overall health system. So in 2010, there were over 26,000 patient visits to emergency departments for non-traumatic dental complaints. So there's also a huge issue, as most of us know, in access to care for dental health. To further advance this, this is a national problem, in which case there's been a series of Institute of Medicine reports, starting with Advancing Oral Health in America in April 2011, followed by Improving Access to Oral Health Care for Vulnerable and Underserved Populations in July 2011, and February 2013, there was an oral health literacy program. While there's a growing recognition that the right now is a really timely opportunity because we have pending changes to oral health care, to the Affordable Care Act, which may increase individuals' access to the whole healthcare system. There aren't specific provisions for addressing oral health or getting people increased access to oral health, but we do see that potentially there's a role for increasing services on the primary care level to support increased oral health screening and get individuals increased oral health care that they might need. Also putting this in context, the first bullet says that few states really have objective oral health screening data on a representative population-based sample. So that's another big issue that we have. Most of the data that we have describing this oral health need is really self-reported data from studies. So what we really need to improve oral health is that we need an evidence-based oral health system that will eliminate barriers, prioritize disease prevention and health promotion, provide oral health services in a variety of settings, and that will ultimately rely on a diverse array of providers. But in order to really understand and feed into this system to meet this vision that the IOM has, we need to better understand what are the determinants and barriers of access to oral health care in populations. So that was the goal of what we were trying to do with our study, was to examine in a geographically diverse base cohort study. So when I say that, what I really mean is that in Wisconsin, people often say, Wisconsin, that's not really representative. Well, the reality is, Wisconsin can be very representative. We have some very isolated rural poor populations. We have some very isolated urban poor populations. And then we have a larger middle class in between. And when you break that down and compare the demographics of Wisconsin to the entire demographics of the whole United States, we actually are pretty middle of the road. So it's a good place to start looking at these different factors. What we really wanted to do with this study was look at the factors for poor oral health to inform policy and identify potential cost-effective interventions for improving health equity. So what we wanted to look at is the role of access to care in predicting poor oral health, and then we also wanted to examine some other determinants in this population. So we wanted to look at psychosocial factors, so some mental health components, behavioral determinants of poor oral health, and then how do the neighborhoods in which we live also impact oral health. And while these things have all been studied, we feel like we have a fairly unique resource in the state of Wisconsin to start addressing that, and that is this SHO program. And I'm sorry it wasn't in my bio, but SHO does not stand. I'm a mom, and so I have my kids in daycare, and I call the daycare provider, and she says, every time you call, I think you're dancing on a stage. And I said, well, I'm far from dancing on a stage. I'm sitting behind a computer analyzing data. But what it is it's from the Survey of the Health of Wisconsin, and it's an independent annual survey, and it's actually modeled after the National Health and Nutrition Exam Survey. So it's got three different components. Our goals are to recruit between 800 to 1,000 participants annually into the survey, and by the end of 2013, we will actually have over 3,000 participants in our program. What's unique about our survey is we have the actual self-reported data, but we also have, these are our mobile trucks that travel around the state, so we also have an opportunity to collect objective health data. The model for our program is really going beyond this disease and healthcare model to say that there are many other larger social and environmental determinants that impact health. So we really use the social determinants of health model in the determining the data that we collect as part of our survey. And we have three different components. So we have home and field center interview data about sociodemographics, medical history, mental health, perceptions about our community. We do a physical exam at the field centers, and we also collect biological samples. Because we were out there on the road and we're continually collecting data, we also have, this infrastructure is meant for research as well as to support partnerships with our local public health. So in 2010, we partnered with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Oral Health Program, and they saw us as an opportunity to build on to the work that we're doing, the basic screening survey that was developed by the Association of State and Territorial Dental Directors, and so we were able to gather objective adult oral health screening data in this population. So we worked with DHS. They funded collection of data on a target of 1,000 people in our population. The DHS oral health program were the people who trained our field staff, who monitored our field staff, and gave them over 40 hours of practice before they went into the field to collect oral health data. And what we collected both on our survey as it relates to oral health outcomes that I want to discuss today was, again, we've seen this question amongst the kids earlier today, the unmet oral health care needs. So during the past 12 months, was there a time when you needed dental care but did not get it at that time? So this is only amongst adults. And then we also looked at mouth pain. So how often during the last 12 months have you had painful aching anywhere in your mouth was the question we asked. And then within the basic screening survey, we looked at untreated cavities, so the loss of tooth or structure or discoloration just through a screening. That we didn't use any actual x-rays for this. And then I classified individuals based on their self-report of these symptoms as well as the oral health screening about whether or not they needed urgent dental treatment. And then we also adjusted for sociodemographic characteristics. We're really interested in understanding the predictors of unmet oral health care needs and oral health conditions in the population. So we looked at sociodemographic characteristics known to predict oral health need. We looked at behaviors. So we also have data asking people about teeth brushing, flossing, frequency of teeth brushing and flossing. And then we looked at access to care as well as some of the psychosocial factors again. And basically we wanted to look at descriptive factors, then run a multivariate logistic regression and build some models where we started to add on these different factors as we went along. So just in terms of what is the magnitude or the prevalence of these issues in Wisconsin, so when you look at the measured data, about 15% of the people we found, and this is probably only the tip of the iceberg because it really is the oral health screening, it's not taking x-rays, we found about 15% had untreated cavities and about 16% needed urgent dental care. Then when we asked about self-report, the symptoms were a little bit higher. So 23% of the population reported having mouth pain, 17% gum disease, and about 20% reported that in the last 12 months they had any unmet dental care needs. And when we started to look at what you'll see, the next series of graphs will have these five different factors that we looked at. So any untreated cavities, needed urgent dental treatment, frequent mouth pain, tooth pain with eating, and any unmet health need. The first two categories, any untreated cavities and urgent dental care, that comes from our oral health screening. And the last three categories were self-report data. So when you look at this, if you look at it, the reporting by gender, we saw an increased proportion of women reporting frequent mouth pain and reporting tooth pain when eating compared to men. So if you're looking at gender, otherwise we didn't really see any difference in these outcomes by gender. When we looked in our population by race, ethnicity, we did see a much larger set of significant predictors. So untreated cavities were higher in the non-white population, urgent dental treatment, frequent mouth pain was much higher, and then self-report of any unmet oral health care need was much higher, again, in the non-white population compared to the white population. We also looked at education. So again, education, the blue being high school degree or less, red being some college but not graduate, and the green being college degree or more. You see the dose response going in the way that one would expect. And for all of the categories, there was a significant difference in education and predicting oral health needs. And similarly, we looked at access to care by insurance status. So we looked at those who were uninsured compared to people who had insurance and any type of public insurance and then private insurance only. And again, it was within those, the uninsured population, that we saw the biggest disparities. And then the other factor that we looked at that's not often looked at is the issue of teeth brushing and behavior. So what we found is that people who brush their teeth most or every day have much fewer untreated cavities needing urgent dental treatment compared to people who never, rarely, or some days brush their teeth, which to me is fairly striking in that education of individuals in primary care. Teeth brushing is a pretty simple behavior to promote within a primary care clinic setting. If we have, but then again, that's getting primary care and other healthcare providers really addressing this issue of oral health literacy. So making people more aware of the importance of brushing teeth and potentially providing that as a resource to people. And I can talk about that a little bit more, but this is striking here. Then we went through looking at the models, the adjusted models, to really look at when you combine these different factors, what are the most significant predictors of oral health care? And really, when you adjust for age and gender and race, ethnicity, education, income, marital status, and all of these other factors, really, again, the frequency of brushing your teeth increases your odds of having any untreated cavities or urgent dental treatment. So these, again, are the measurement issues. By almost threefold. So there's an almost threefold increase in the odds of having poor oral health for people who never, rarely, or sometimes brush their teeth compared to those who brush their teeth on most days. And then also your neighborhood for any untreated cavities, neighborhood down below, so under the contextual factors, that other highlighted odds, almost a twofold increase in the odds of having untreated cavities. If you live in a community that is in the top quartile of our state for economic hardship, so we combined about five different variables into a measure of community level measure of economic hardship. And in those communities, individuals that we surveyed from those communities had a twofold increased odds of untreated cavities. Again, and then the other issue that was predictive of urgent dental treatment and untreated cavities, again, were uninsured versus private, and then self-report of any unmet oral health care needs. So individuals were pretty predictive of their own untreated cavities or needing urgent dental care needs. So if people self-reported that they had unmet dental care needs, there was a fourfold increase in them having untreated cavities or needing urgent dental care. And then when you look at the self-reported outcomes, you can also see that frequency in teeth brushing and teeth brushing per day were also associated with unmet dental care needs. And then in this slide we looked at, so let's see, to go back, what I didn't notice, if you look around the psychosocial factors, so looking at depression, anxiety, and stress for measured oral health care needs, there really was no association with those factors. But when you start to look at people's self-report of oral health care needs, there is a relationship with the psychosocial factors. So particularly anxiety increased, the threefold increase in self-report of frequent mouth pain occurred, adjusting for all different factors. And then there was a slight increase, almost significant, in the depression factor, but stress did not increase. But interestingly enough, stress, self-reported stress, did not have an association with people's self-report of oral health care needs. So again, if we're working just on self-report data of oral health and oral health care needs, we have to be cognizant that there's other potential modifiers or predictors that are impacting our association. And again, people who also self-reported unmet health care needs at the very bottom had almost a fourfold increase in reporting frequent mouth pain in our population. So I just wanted to go back I fixed this last night and didn't re-upload the slides. But this is looking just at issues of the, going back to look at the psychosocial predictors of oral health care needs, just so you can see more graphically rather than in that big chart, that it really is, amongst depression, there really is a slight increase in the odds. While not significant, one might say that depression is related to these oral health care needs. But it clearly, in the anxiety category, that bottom bar actually should be about 1.4. So that one is significant, and you can see the difference in the effect sizes of oral health needs for depression and anxiety in our population. And then when we looked at results, we also asked people for when they were reporting unmet healthcare needs, what were some of the major predictors of that? A good chunk of them were issues related to convenience. So these are the top categories. They're not mutually exclusive. So we asked, what are any of the reasons that one might not have unmet healthcare needs? Many of the people said the dental office is too far away, it's not open at convenient times, I'm unable to take time off of work, the dentist would not accept my insurance. Oh, and then the next category is really cost or lack or limited insurance. So there's many different of these categories saying, The last one, about over 60% of those people, or close to 60% who had unmet healthcare needs, said they could not afford the cost. About 45% said they didn't have insurance. So really, this issue of access is a big issue. There was the one that I find interesting. Where is it? It's in here. About 16% of our population said they were afraid or they don't like dentists. So again, that might be an issue where there might be a role for in the primary care setting to promote some of these healthier behaviors and reduce some fears around going to the dentist that may be important preventive measures within this population. So this quickly, the strengths of our study is this cohort provides both objective and subjective measures of oral health and unmet dental care needs. It was a fairly unique and novel partnership to have our population-based survey partnering with the health department to gather these data. And we were able to look at a breadth of contextual determinants. So we were also looking at behavior and psychosocial factors. The limitations are these are just cross-sectional data, so it would be interesting if we could do some follow-up on different individuals or design some interventions based off these data, some more targeted interventions. And I do have to give the caveat that the oral health screening data that we used was purposely developed for surveillance purposes and not for research purposes. And so in conclusion, I think these findings suggest some low-hanging fruit in improving oral health care through perception or behavioral interventions. Unmet oral health care, even after adjusting for health behaviors and other individual sociodemographic factors, remains the strongest predictor of oral health care needs. And primary care can and should play a role, I believe, these are my opinions, in increasing access and prevention of poor oral health. And then these findings, I think, could be important in informing policy and moving directions forward. So I want to thank everyone. Dr. Lauren Wisk is here as well. She just entered the room. So she was really instrumental in helping to analyze these data and move this project forward. But we have many people, including the Wisconsin Department of Health, that I want to thank. And our funders, the National Institute of the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, the Wisconsin Partnership Program, and the Wisconsin Department of Health for funding this research. And I have no other disclosures. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Malachy. Our next speaker was a slight change in the program. We had a speaker that had to withdraw, and we were fortunate enough to fill in that slot. Our next speaker is Dr. Alice Horowitz, who's a research associate professor at the School of Public Health, University of Maryland. Dr. Horowitz is a health educator and formerly was a senior scientist at NIDCR at the NIH. She served as the NIH lead for the Healthy People 2010 Oral Health Chapter and worked on Healthy People 2010 and Healthy People 2020. She also organized the NIDCR's workshop on oral health literacy and co-authored the resultant findings. She served on the recent Institute of Medicine's panel, Advancing Oral Health in America. And she's here today with a special video entitled Healthy Mouths for You and Your Baby.
Good morning, and I'm very, very happy to see you, and I will take a few minutes to explain how I sneaked in under the tent, and that is because there was a dropout, and I happen to have this really super video based on epidemiologic data, and thought that I should share that with you. So most of you know in this room that 6 years ago, Diamante Driver died in the very county where my school is located, Prince George's County. And my governor at that time and the health administrator said, never again on our watch. As a result of that, there's been a huge focus on how can we prevent this disease. And our tack has been to start before it starts. By that I mean is that we are interested in working with prenatal classes in terms of working with gravid women. And so what we did originally was to survey by phone a random sample of over 600 moms in the state of Maryland to find out what they know about preventing tooth decay. And also, excuse me, the second part was to find out what they think about the communication practices of their dental care providers. So the video I'm about to show you is based on the facts that Maryland residents basically don't know much about preventing tooth decay among low-income, among Medicaid users. They don't know what fluoride is. They don't know what it does. They don't know what sealants are, and they don't know what they are. We have a problem in our state with, for example, state-based sealant programs because the low-income don't sign their children up for them, and it's basically because they don't know what it is. We haven't bothered to educate. So what we have done is to develop this video primarily to work with gravid women, to work with women of very young children. And the bottom line is that if any of you are interested in a copy of this, I have copies with me. And we've also developed posters and brochures to go with it, and it's on YouTube, and you're free to use it a lot. But now you have to help me because I don't know how to get this movie up. Because and you're going to recognize a couple of colleagues in this video. We use local talent. All of the moms in this, let me just say one other thing, is that our research has demonstrated that moms, especially low-income moms, want to learn from other moms. So that's really what we have focused on.